supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The moon takes a leisurely 27 days or so to complete a lap around the Earth. Well, now let's consider a star a mere 2.5 times further away from its companion that orbits every 28 minutes. Let's prepare for windburn with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute.
That's an incredibly high rate of speed, especially considering the mass of the objects we're talking about. One of the components actually is a black hole. And this is a good deal of what's driving what's going on here, because we have the binary star component that's orbiting this black hole at that incredible rate of speed. And that's just unbelievable.
And if it's so close to that black hole, why doesn't it get swallowed up?
Well, so that's a really great question, because you would think from, you know, what we normally hear about black holes, that anything that gets close to the black hole is going to get sucked in. But here we have a situation where they're not just standing still, but there's actually movement. So it's as if that very, very high speed of rotation is constantly throwing the star out away from the black hole, while the gravitational pull of the black hole is holding that star in orbit around that common point of gravity.
I've learned from you that our star is an anomaly to the extent that it's a single. Most stars apparently show up in these so-called binary pairs. But how unusual is it for a star's companion to be a black hole rather than a second star?
Well, it all depends on how these stars were formed, what kind of families they were formed in, and if they had, let's say, big brothers or big sisters nearby that they formed with. Well, then that would be an inevitability that that bigger brother or bigger sister is going to convert over into the black hole, and then the sibling, the smaller star, is going to become enmeshed with that larger brother like that, the black hole. Since there are plenty of stars of decent size around our galaxy, then this is probably not so unusual that a pair might have a black hole as a component.
Let's stick with that big brother, big sister theme. I understand there's new understanding of how stars are formed.
Yes, and this is a really interesting way in which stars are being identified now to be formed, because it's in association with black holes, and we typically think of black holes as being very destructive. And indeed, that is the case. Stars get too close, they get torn apart, the material gets flung down onto the accretion disk of the black hole. The material spins around the accretion disk, warms up, and is often radiated away in jets that squirt out along the rotational axis of this, carrying that material with them. Well, astronomers thought that it was possible that stars could form in those jets, because if you're breaking down stellar material and flinging it out away from the black hole, well, inevitably there's going to be some hydrogen and helium mixed in that, and perhaps this could be an environment where maybe a star could form, because it's so rich with what's necessary for stars to form. But the contrasting part about this is those jets. Those jets blasting away from black holes, in some instances, have been reported to be moving as fast as 94 million miles per hour.
Excuse me.
I wish I could even frame that in a way that made sense, other than to say 14% of the speed of light. That doesn't even really help. It's an incredibly high rate of speed, which in and of itself could be seen as destructive, particularly when we're looking at a cloud of gas and dust from which a star could be born through the coalescence of that cloud of gas and the collapse of that cloud of gas. And remember, when we say cloud of gas and dust in space, we're talking about hydrogen gas. So it's extremely tenuous to begin with. Now we're going to introduce on top of that this incredibly high velocity jet blasting out of a black hole. So it's indeed unusual that astronomers have been able to see now the signature of young stars in these jets.
Here's an example where science advances sometimes linearly, other times in fits and starts. And apparently the first supernova was observed in 1604, and then not until centuries later.
Well, that was the first supernova seen with human eyes in 1604. And this most recent one, 1987, here we're talking about an event in which a star explodes. It's reached the end of its life, its standard life, and it explodes. And it explodes with such incredible force that the brightness allows it to be seen even during the day for weeks.
Was that the description in 1604?
It definitely was. I mean, the records that have been kept on this, which are not prolific, definitely indicate that this star was visible during the day without any problem at all.
What else could possibly be seen overhead during the day?
Well, it's a challenge, but not only can you see the moon during the day, of course, as we all know, but Venus can also be seen during the day, naked eye, without telescopic aid. But that's about the end of it. But in this particular case, these exploding stars have made themselves visible here on Earth to naked eye observers during the day. So there's a tremendous amount of energy being released there. But our understanding is that this kind of event certainly happens often enough around the galaxy. It's just a question of whether or not we can see it from our vantage point.
Derek, when April showers are not intervening, what's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
This first week of April, Dave, we're in really great shape for observing. We have Mars over in the western sky after sunset. The moon is traversing this week through its first quarter phases, so we'll first see it over on the western side of the sky. It'll be making its way through the south and over toward the east. And Jupiter is now well up in the east at 9:30 p.m.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.